I'm Bert Cohen, and this is Keeping Democracy Alive.
He's not breathing.
Can you get a pulse?
Barely.
Over the past century, practically no Democrat has won the presidency without winning a majority of working-class voters. In fact, until very recent times, there was no question that Democrats were the party of the working class. Republicans were correctly seen as the party of big business, the upper class. Our guest today, the New Republic's Timothy Noah, says that to prevail in 2024, Biden will need to win the working class vote. And that today looks shaky. What happened? Democrats used to be the party of working class champion Franklin Roosevelt. Well, in the 21st century, how did such a large portion of America's working class become some of the Republican Party's most enthusiastic supporters? Why do they so often vote vigorously for policies that are clearly against their own economic interests? Well, writing in the New Republic, Timothy Noah asserts that, yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. We'll be discussing that now. And he notes that since he was elected in 2020, despite his work on their behalf, Joe Biden's support among working class voters of all races has fallen alarmingly. Noah presents his argument after a deep dive into the substantial research of many reputable think tanks and institutions. His essay suggests many ways that President Biden and the Democratic Party can reverse the slide. A big question is whether or not the party establishment will pay attention and act accordingly. Well, the name of this show, as you dear listener know, is Keeping Democracy Alive. And with the upcoming election, if it can indeed be kept alive, is truly at stake like never before. Biden and the Democrats have a serious obligation to save our Republican form of government, with a small r, from the one who openly says he'd be a dictator from day one. In his essay in the New Republic, Timothy Noah notes, the Democratic slippage among working class voters worsened during the past decade, but that, quote, disaffection with the Democratic Party doesn't mean a working class voter won't pull the lever for a Democrat. It just means that working class voters will need a lot more persuading than in the past. Timothy Noah, thanks so much for being with us on Keeping Democracy Alive.
Thank you so much for having me.
Timothy Noah is a staff writer for the New Republic, a venerable left-leaning great publication, and maintains the Substack newsletter Backbencher. Noah was also a Washington-based reporter for the Wall Street Journal, an assistant managing editor for the U.S. News and World Report, congressional correspondent for Newsweek, an editor on the New York Times op-ed page, an editor of the Washington Monthly, and labor policy editor for Politico. He's written for the New York Times, Washington Post, The Atlantic, Time, and the New York Review of Books, another great publications, and he's contributing frequent broadcast commentaries on CBS Sunday Morning. Well, again, thanks for being with us, Timothy. Among the many examples of research you used in writing this article was that of the Center for American Progress. Who are they? And please tell us about what their important research shows.
Yes, the Center for American Progress is a liberal think tank, and it has an advocacy arm called the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And the president of the Action Fund is someone named Naveen Nayak, and he and his staff did an interesting study. They wanted to look at what House and Senate candidates talked about during the midterm elections. So they collected every press release, every tweet, every Facebook post, and they reviewed them. And they wanted to find out how often economic concerns of working class voters came up. And amazingly, they found that the search words workers, wages, jobs, working families, and costs appeared in only 6% of the congressional statements. When you added economy and economic, they appeared in only 11%. this is amazing. These were, you know, Democratic candidates they were looking at, and these are Democratic issues, and the Democrats weren't talking about Democratic issues. They're also working class issues, and they were not talking about working class issues. As I said in my piece, it was almost as if New Deal liberalism had become some sort of ancient language like Latin or Sanskrit that the Democrats didn't know how to speak anymore.
Right. Absolutely amazing that they would stray so far from what had been for, you know, practically 100 years, the very identity of the Democratic Party. You also, in addition to the Center for American Progress, you cite findings from the Center for Working Class Politics. Who are they, and what kind of unique research did they conduct? And
they are a very interesting, very small kind of shoestring think tank, but I think a very important one. I mean, it's telling that the name Center for Working Class Politics was even available, right?
Indeed. Yeah, that does say something.
You sort of want to say, gee, you mean to tell me there wasn't a Center for Working Class Politics before? So they did some research sponsored by, co-sponsored by YouGov and Jacobin, which is a leftist magazine. And they did a study similar to the one that Cap Action did. And they found much the same thing. It was slightly different. They compiled a database of campaign websites representing 92% of all Democratic primary and general election candidates. So it's a kind of bigger group of people. And they found that fewer than 30% of the candidates' websites mentioned the need for higher paying jobs. Fewer than 20% mentioned the need for paid family and medical leave. Fewer than 10% mentioned the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or known as the PRO Act, which is a bill to strengthen labor rights. The Democratic House passed it in March 2021. It didn't advance in the Senate. About 5% mentioned the $15 minimum wage, which I think is probably, this is an unscientific observation, but I think it is probably the most politically popular economic policy of our time. So once again, you find that candidates are avoiding, in these crucial midterm elections, the basic message to the working class.
Absolutely amazing. It's kind of interesting that the Democrats did as well as we did in 2022 in the off-year election. I'll tell you, it's very odd, and we'll try to figure out why they're avoiding these issues. Well, why do you think they're avoiding the issues? Could it be as simple and direct that the Democratic candidates, you know, they depend on money from big donors, and they don't want to alienate them? Is that part of it, do you think? Could it be that simple?
I think that is part of it. And I think also the election, you know, there was a lot of talk in the election about the suburban voters winning over kind of independents in the suburbs. And there was a lot of talk about the abortion issue, which was a very powerful issue. I'm, you know, not disputing that. But there was no attempt to go after the working class vote. And it was not an either or sort of situation. One of the things a lot of these studies I looked at said was that on economic issues, you can go pretty far left on economic issues without annoying the more affluent voters. In fact, in some cases, the more affluent voters are more receptive to a more left economic message than working class people are. So the only people you're going to anger are fundraisers.
Wow, that's so interesting. You never know what research is going to turn up. I mean, it's usually, it seems like it's often what you don't expect. And I have to wonder, Bill Clinton did very well with the working class, I believe, in his 92 and 96 campaigns. But I wonder if there's still damage in effect from the Clintons' corporate drift away from our working class identity. I mean, he took the labor unions for granted, and they knew it. Do you think the legacy and perception of the Democrats as being tone deaf to the working class, who feels like they've been forgotten and left behind, continues to hurt the perception of the Democratic Party to this day? Your thoughts?
I think it does. I think it does. And Clinton's, he's a complex case because he's the only, I think he's the only Democrat since LBJ to win a majority of the white working class vote, which has been difficult for Democrats to win ever since passage of the Civil Rights Act and the other civil rights bills. So, you know, on the one hand, he did have kind of a magic touch with the working class in general and the white working class in particular. On the other hand, he did preside over some policies that have proved harmful to the working class. In fairness to Clinton, I think the shortcomings of these policies were not as evident at the time as they have become in subsequent years. But he was certainly ignoring labor unions at the time, regarded them as just another special interest group. And that was very foolish. It's a complicated legacy from Clinton.
Yeah, that is for sure. What about, you say that President Biden has, quote, lavished more attention on working class issues, laboring class issues, than any president since Harry Truman. So there's been three Democratic predecessors. I wonder about them and how they affected the party's relation to America's working class constituency. You know, there was Jimmy Carter, and Clinton, of course. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Biden really has reconnected. It has been, more pro-labor than any president since Truman. He doesn't get a lot of competition. It's not like there's anybody fighting him for the title. But I think he has brought the Democrats back to their roots in a good way. And I think he deserves a lot of praise for that. He's not reaping any tangible political benefit right now, but I think the word hasn't gotten out sufficiently is part of the problem, and I think the Democrats are clumsy in reaching out to the working class in ways that I describe in my piece. But you mentioned the last three presidents. Yeah. Clinton was wary of labor, The North American Free Trade Act turned out to be much more harmful domestically than people were saying at the time. After Clinton,
Obama.
We forgot Carter. Yes, Carter also had an arm's length relationship with labor. Again, regarded them as kind of a special interest. He did try to pass a labor reform bill. And I give him credit for that, but he was not able to get it through Congress.
And about Obama?
And Obama, Obama was probably of the three of them the most pro-labor, but even he was very careful about sounding too pro-labor. He did pursue trade policies that labor disagreed with strongly. He was, I think, a pretty good president, but he was not vocally pro-labor. And I think that's frustration, particularly since I think he was smart enough to understand the importance of labor, not only for the Democrats, but also for the problem of inequality, which he engaged during his second term, and he kind of understood it intellectually, but he was not able to translate it into a political message.
He's kind of a quandary, and it'll be interesting to see how history treats the Obama presidency. It's too early to tell so far. But I wonder, among the laboring classes, is there reason to glean from the research that the middle and working classes see Democrats as the party specifically that has enabled gentrification to sweep across America? Is that like part of our identity now? I wonder.
I don't think I looked at any studies that specifically said that, but it's certainly there for all to see, and that there is an attitude that the Democrats have been taken over by their college grad constituency, and even before the Democrats kind of laid claim to the college grad constituency, which is quite recent. The college grads were in play really until 2016, when the Democrats decisively won them, and it looks like they're never going back to the Republican Party anytime soon anyway. So, but even before that, you had the Democratic Party orienting itself more towards environmentalism and
social issues,
social issues, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with any of that.
Right.
Those are all important issues. But I think there was a perception that these were issues that appealed to a more affluent kind of constituent. And the Democrats, as labor weakened, I think the Democrats took them for granted at election time, and did not do much for labor, partly out of a sense, I think, that, where are they going to go? The Republicans were nakedly hostile to labor. And so they had nowhere else to go. And so a certain kind of cynicism set in. And it's been very harmful. It's contributed enormously, I think, to income inequality.
For those who may have just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive, and our guest today is the New Republic's Timothy Noah, who's written a piece in the New Republic that says, yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. And one of the things I've wondered about, I mean, the Democrats have long relied on the Catholic demographic, which tends to be more conservative socially. And I wonder if, the problem... one of the issues with the working class vote is the so-called special issues, the social issues, gay rights, trans rights, things like that. And if that's turning people off, I mean, it must be sort of tough for Democrats because they got to do both, be champions for the working class as well as for, social issues and everybody's rights.
I think there's no question that working class people tend to be more conservative on the social issues, although not all social issues. I don't see any evidence that working class people are any happier about Roe v. Wade being overturned than anybody else.
Uh-huh, right.
The working class turned against the Democrats in the late 60s, race was an issue. Crime was also an issue. Mm-hmm. People forget that there was an increase in crime, and an increase in crime is never good news for Democrats.
Right.
And my feeling is that the way to appeal to a working class voter is to appeal based on economics, because that's what defines the working class voter,
right,
is economics. And it is, a pocketbook issue.
Yes.
And when there is no discussion of these pocketbook issues, polarization over social issues can easily fill the void. I don't think Republicans have had great success demagoguing on some of the newer social issues, like sort of gender and so on, but that doesn't mean that voters are receptive to those issues either, I think. This is, you know, my sense. Again, I don't have... Well, actually, there were a couple of studies that supported this, is that working class people, like a lot of people, like especially like a lot of older people, find these issues bewildering and don't particularly like hearing politicians say, we're going to do this about that, we're going to do that about it. This is a new... These are new issues that need to be sorted out, and they should be sorted out by doctors and sociologists. And the last people you want sorting these issues out are conservative Republicans.
That's for sure. And, you know, the Republicans are trying like crazy to make crime an issue. It doesn't seem... to be working at this point, and the whole culture...
The crime rate is not cooperating.
Right. Oh, my God.
Crime has ticked up. I mean, it's a problem someplace. It's a problem where I live in Washington, D.C., for sure.
Yeah.
But it seems to be localized, and it's not... You know, it's. I don't think it's a big issue.
Not a pervasive issue. But what they're trying to say, you know, the term illegal aliens, that they're painting, you know, refugees, people who come here looking for freedom and to you know, do better for their families and leave terrible situations, largely in Central America. They're painting them as criminals, and gosh, that seems to be working, and it seems to have painted the Democrats into a corner. It's like they have to echo the Republican talking points about immigration and the new arrivals.
Well, I don't know exactly how the politics go on illegal immigration. I kind of heard people arguing both sides of that when I was doing my research, so I didn't really write much about it. It seems to me the practical situation is you have anarchy on the border because Congress refuses to pass any laws addressing the problem. Obviously, immigration has to be addressed in an orderly way. Yeah. You've got a lot of Republicans posturing on this issue, and as I think Biden has a very powerful point when he says, look, I took their bill.
Right.
And I said, let's pass it. And they wouldn't pass their own bill because they wanted to use it as a political issue.
Yes, absolutely. And I do wonder if there's a perception how wide it is among, you know, laboring class people that, gosh, the Democrats are doing all they can to help immigrants. But what about me? You're forgetting me, the people who live here now. I have a feeling that that's getting some traction.
And I think the answer to that is for Democrats to advertise, publicize the things that Biden has done that do support working people. They're not hard to find. There are a lot of them. He's done more for working people than any president really in recent memory, I think.
Yeah, he was the first one to walk on a picket line. No,
that's
president has ever done that before, I don't think.
The symbolism is remarkable. And I don't think Ben... And while he was walking the picket line, Donald Trump was speaking to a bunch of non-union auto workers. That's a very stark difference. I mean, the idea that Trump is pro... the working man is very easily refuted by his record when he was president, especially when you look at his NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, which I know these are words that make people's eyes glaze over, but it's the part of the government that decides what the rules are for union organizing. Mm-hmm. And whenever the Republicans have the White House, the rules tilt against labor unions.
Yes.
Deliberately so.
Always.
When the Democrats come in, they try and tilt it back. That's just a fact. And it's in the interest of working people that they be able to organize if they so choose.
Absolutely. And I think that's a live issue in as we go into 2024, that there is, you've looked at the research, but my sense is that there's more pro-labor union sentiment out there than there has been in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Labor unions are very popular. They're even pretty popular among Republicans.
Huh.
You know, I think it's not a majority, but a very significant minority of Republicans are pro-union. The only constituency that's anti-union are the money people. And there's a very telling anecdote in the Rui Teixeira, John Judas book you mentioned. The card check bill came before Congress, and Obama had to decide whether to support or not, and he was inclined to support it. He'd voted for it as a senator, and he was talked out of it by Penny Pritzker, a billionaire, and she was his campaign finance chair. Penny Pritzker and Lester Crown, who was, and another guy named Neil Bloom, who was a real estate tycoon. Mm. And, you know, that says it all right there. Obama chickened out because he didn't want to make the billionaires mad.
I think a lot of people would kind of like to make the billionaires mad. There's going to be a lot of support for that. You know,
I think that's right. I think that's right. There's you know, now the politics have changed. Part of what's going on, I think, is the politics have become more amenable to to economic liberalism. So I don't want to completely blame Clinton and Obama. They were operating at a different time. On the other hand, a president plays a significant role in determining what the politics of his time is. And certainly Biden is doing that right now.
For sure. And among the groups that Democrats could always rely on has been African Americans. This is a question, I think. Currently, the support for Biden among non-college African-Americans is weak, as your research indicates, the research you cite indicates.
Well, it's strong, but diminishing is, I think, the fair way to say it. It's strong among Latinos, too, but it is diminishing. And it's diminishing especially fast with Latinos. Yeah, that's kind of scary. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this. I said, it's kind of a good news, bad news joke. I said, you know, the good news is that, the working class is more unified than it's been in the past, that it's less riven by racial division. That's the good news. The bad news is the direction in which it's being less riven is in supporting Republicans.
Oh, yeah, interesting. And I don't know where, you know, the social and cultural values come into how people decide, you know, African-Americans as well as Latinos. And there's the non-college white vote, which is interesting. It's not been a place where there's strong support in general, it seems, at least these days, perhaps it used to be. You note that, though not as severe as among African-Americans or Latino communities, there continues...
The losses, yes. Biden's losses among non-college whites was not nearly as bad as his losses among Latinos and African-Americans. And I think he did a little better than Hillary did with non-college whites. But his leakage... With African Americans and Latino non-college voters was substantial.
And what does your, I mean, your article is, yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. How can the white working class, well, if you had the president's ear, what would you say to him about the, you know, regaining the white non-college vote?
I would say a few things. One of the things I would say, and I'm very proud of the statistics, so I have to cite it because it took me 2 days to work this out. there is, going back 100 years, as you mentioned almost no Democrat has gotten elected without working class support. There's actually only one exception to that, and that was Biden in the last election. And it was not a circumstance that's going to be repeated this time out. He was running against a president, an incumbent who was badly mishandling an epidemic. The economy was going haywire. The pandemic was going haywire. You know, none of those circumstances pertain. So I think that Biden, that it's really true that a Democrat can't win the White House, except for that, you know, there's an exception to every rule, but a Democrat really can't win the White House without winning the working class vote, which is, and that's defining working class as the non-college voter. And so that's the first thing I'd say about the working class generally, not just the white working class. The white working class is harder for the Democrats to get than the Latino and African-American working class. And not all that surprising, given that the white working class was alienated by civil rights legislation, by crime in the 60s and 70s, and by the social issues you mentioned. But but the white working class's story is not as straightforward as you might think. You hear a lot of talk about how the Democrats used to own the working class constituency. But when the New Deal coalition was at its absolute peak in power in the 1950s, it lost congressional lost control of Congress in 1946, and I think again I forget which year, and it elected Ike twice in the 1950s. Now, everybody always says, well, that doesn't count because Eisenhower was a war hero. Both the Democrats and the Republicans tried to get him interested in being their nominee. That's all true. But if you look at Adlai Stevenson's record, first of all, he was terrible on labor issues. He had absolutely no facility for talking to a working class audience. He was, this is where the egghead image really hurt him. And he was a little professorial with them in an off-putting way. He was not terrifically supportive of labor issues. The big issue of the day, and probably the most, the biggest setback for labor in Congress in history, certainly in recent history, was the Taft-Hartley bill, and which had passed over Truman's veto. And Stevenson said he was in favor of at least parts of Taft-Hartley, and that was not a smart thing to say in an election. He ended up actually, even though yes, he lost to Eisenhower, he was probably going to lose to Eisenhower anyway. But he did worse among working class voters than he did among voters in general. And that tells you that he really sort of dropped the ball on appealing to this core constituency. In 1960, JFK wins the working class by a hair. I think he lost the white working class by a hair. That was a very close race, interesting, of course. And then Clinton wins the white working class. So it's not a straightforward case of the white working class being impossible to get, but it has gotten a lot more difficult. And, you know, probably Biden doesn't have much of a chance winning back the white working class. He might be able to improve his standing with them a little bit, but the key constituency that he's losing, that where he really needs to reverse a big trend, is with Latin American and African American working class voters. That's where the damage is right now.
Gosh, I hope he can do it. I really hope he can do it. I'm giving away my liberal leanings, what can I tell you? No surprise to anybody. For those who just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive, and our guest today is Timothy Noah of The New Republic, who's written in that magazine, yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. And one of the things, going back to Stevenson Eisenhower, maybe, you know, calling him an egghead, maybe that was the start of, you know, doubts about well-educated people. You know, nowadays there seems to be an incredibly virulent anti-intellectualism, and that really anti-education in general, which is amazing to me, but they see being educated as being elitist. And celebrate. Right.
And the joke about Stevenson, incidentally, was he didn't win the eggheads either. He lost the he lost college grads. Oh. He probably did pretty well with you know, with the intellectuals and the, you know, the very tippy top of the egghead constituency. But among college graduates, you know, college graduates in those days, and until pretty recently, tended to vote Republican just because they didn't want their taxes to be high.
Uh-huh. But what about this new anti-intellectualism, anti-education, and you know, just people seeing being educated as being elitist? Is that an opportunity for Biden, or how big a difficulty is that for Biden?
It's certainly. That's part of Trump's message, is to be rude about the intellectual elites and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, the Democrats aren't going to have a problem getting the intellectual elites to vote for him in this election. They need to appeal to working class voters. And I don't think they need to spurn intellectuals in order to get there. Again, they need to speak to the core issues, which are economic issues. And the at the absolute top of the list, several people told me, is the price of insulin. Biden capped the price of insulin. That's, you know, nice and concrete and simple. It's a Medicare issue, and a lot of voters are elderly. He capped the price of insulin at $35 a month. Trump talked about doing it, but didn't do it. Biden did it for all Medicaid recipients, and that Medicare, sorry, recipients. Right. And now he's trying to do it for everybody. That is a really substantial thing that Biden can brag about. He can say, look, if you're diabetic, you might have noticed that your insulin, the price of your insulin has gone down. That was something that the president did, and he did it by challenging the drug companies. And he is also challenging the drug companies on the prices of other medicines. He is the first, you know, just about every president has tried to get, you know, volume discounts on medicines that are sold to Medicare. George W. Bush couldn't get it when he passed the Medicare drug benefit. Everybody since then, Democrat or Republican, has said they were going to do this, and the, you know, big pharma would not stand for it. And Biden got it done.
And I have to think that the words challenging the drug companies resonate in a positive fashion with a majority of people. And, you know, the insulin thing, you know, when you consider that something like 40% of Americans are obese, and there's, you know, there's a lot of diabetics there. As you say, $35, there's something very concrete that Joe Biden can point to. And you got to keep...
Yeah, the advice I got, I want to quote Matt Morrison of Working America, who's a really brilliant guy, and he said what you got to start with is a quote: start with every Medicare beneficiary in every community that you can geo-indicate as having disproportionate levels of diabetes, and push like crazy the $35 cap. That's what you have to do.
It's not complicated. And
no,
it has to be relatively simple. I mean, because, you know, there's so much competition for people's eyeballs these days, you know, and to catch their attention. That one, you know, keep it simple, stupid, as I don't know who originated that. But it's interesting. You know, there are, I mean, college graduates, and you say, this is interesting, I wanted to pursue this. You say, quote, electoral math compels Democrats to pick up two college graduates for every non-college voter who leaves. Tell us about that and how doable that is or not. Does it make sense for the Biden campaign to focus more on expanding its share of college voters since it's perhaps more doable?
Well, look, they can use every voter they can get their hands on, but they have to, if to the extent that there is competition for resources, the priority ought to be going after working class voters, because there's just a lot more of them. You know, 2/3 of the country doesn't go to college.
Mm-hmm. So trying to expand that, it takes a lot of effort for not that much reward. Interesting point. It makes more sense from what you've discovered in the research you've looked at that to go after, you know, the laboring class, working class vote, that'll pay off in terms of just strict numbers. And, you know, as we all know, who wins the popular vote doesn't elect a president. There mm-hmm. are six people who won the popular vote but did not become president. And a recent New York Times editorial noted that a Biden victory turns on a win in Pennsylvania. What do we know about the key constituencies in those battleground states?
What we know is that they have a higher proportion of working class voters than the other states. So everything I've been saying is based on the national profile of working class voters. But it's even more true when you're talking about those battleground states. They are states with a higher proportion of working class voters than the rest of the country.
Mm. Got to reach out to them. Pennsylvania is really it's key. I thought that was an interesting editorial. I mean, he's from close to Pennsylvania, but and his Scranton background has got to help him, I would think, in terms of identifying with working class voters. I mean, there are exceptions. You know, Ted Kennedy was obviously not from a working class family, but he was very popular among working class voters. Very popular. I think largely because he was their champion. I mean, he took on their issues and you know, he made it clear that he was fighting for them.
Well, the great example is FDR. He was a dandy with a cigarette holder, but he
traitor to his class. Yes,
right. He knew how to talk to working people, yeah. And he knew how to talk rudely in the appropriate way about the rich. The other thing about FDR that I think people forget is he just had a wonderful sense of humor. It was hard not to love him when he was joking around. He was he just really knew how to keep an audience with him. Mm. I do say in my piece that, you know, one thing that Democrats could do a lot better is running working class candidates.
Yeah.
It's, you know, an FDR or a Teddy Kennedy, you know, it's great when you've got them, but you can more reliably win working class votes with working class candidates. And there seems to be weirdly little effort at making that a priority. You know, there's a wonderful book by a man named Nicholas Carnes, came out in 2018. It's called The Cash Ceiling, Why Only the Rich Run for Office and What We Can Do About It.
Oh, yes.
And he found that working class politicians, defined as politicians who held a blue collar job right before entering politics, occupy about 2% of the seats in Congress between 1961 and 2011. So this isn't a new problem. It is a problem, and it does seem to be getting worse in state legeciatures. You saw the proportion of working class politicians fall a little bit from 5% to 3% during that same period, 61 to 2011. So it's a longstanding problem that is getting worse because, you know, state legislatures are the canaries in the coal mine with regard to Congress, because today's state legislator is tomorrow's member of Congress.
Yeah, that's often the case. And there's also young people. Democrats could always count on young voters. When I was young, you know, no question, it was Democrats. But it seems to me that there's two things hurting support for Biden among the young people constituency. One is the constant repetition of the fact that Biden is old. Yeah, he's old. Mm-hmm. So what? The other, of course, is Biden's military support for Israel's assault on Gaza. I wonder about young people. I mean, they're not necessarily working class people, but you got to have them. What do you think Biden can do about this constituency?
Well, I have to start by saying I actually wrote a separate piece about the youth vote recently. And I think that, first of all, I think the youth vote, there is a heavy bias when people talk about the youth vote to talk about that portion of America's youth that is most familiar to professional pontificators on politics, and that is college students. You have to remember, college students are not the youth vote. George McGovern made that rude discovery in 1972.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, the 18-year-old vote, that was the first national election with the 18-year-old vote, and it didn't really do them much good. They were not a coherent group.
That's
they
true.
Were divided according to class and their voting. That was one problem. The other bigger problem was that they didn't vote very much. That is still true. The youth vote has been increasing lately, and that is wonderful, but it is still not very large. It's about 50%. And you have much higher percentages of older people voting.
Yes.
And I'm looking at...
So it makes sense to go, not just for working class people, but older people as well, that the, you know, bigger bang for the buck, so to speak.
I'm not saying ignore the youth.
No, but I am saying
don't worry about it too much. The good news is that as Biden is losing younger voters, he is, and this is a big surprise to me, he's picking up older voters. There was a very interesting article recently in Politico about this. I don't really understand why, because one of the problems with the electorate in this country is that it's dominated by older voters, and older voters tend to be conservative. But he's actually doing pretty well with older voters right now in the polls. I don't know if that will continue, but that's pretty good. But I keep dodging your question about the youth vote. And yes, he's got to change his policy on Israel. I think that he has to cut off arms to Israel and say to them, we negotiate now, and we negotiate from a position of, you don't get arms for us. Now let's talk about what you're going to do, because I think that's the only thing Netanyahu is going to listen to.
I think that'd be a good thing to do politically, but there's the power of AIPAC, which has always been there. Anyway.
Yeah, I've always felt that AIPAC power was overestimated.
Really?
And I think it's diminished. I think it's diminished today. I think American Jews are less enamored of Israel today than they have been in the past. I'm not saying it's not politically tricky, because there is a large number of Jews who are very, very pro-Israel. Right. But, you know, it's not unusual for presidents to cut off aid to Israel. It's actually something that used to be fairly routine because it's not new that Israel goes off and does things that the United States doesn't want it to do. Eisenhower did it. Either Nixon or Ford did it at one point. Ronald Reagan. These are all people who are thought of as being very pro-Israel, and they were very pro-Israel, but that didn't mean that they let Israel get away with doing whatever they wanted. And they did cut off arms shipments and military aid when Israel displeased them. The last person to do this was George H.W. Bush. And for some reason, ever since then, this has been considered off the table for Democrats. I don't completely understand why. I think partly it's because Republicans became more pro-Israel than they'd been in the past. But in any case, if he did it, if he cut off aid, and military aid, and I'm just talking about offensive aid. I'm not talking about aid for the Iron Dome, which is defensive. Mm-hmm. And certainly Israel should get all the help it needs shooting down missiles at Israel, like the ones from Iran. But offensive aid, that's a separate pot of money. And I think that Biden should cut it off. So I think the youth vote would be very happy about that, to the extent that, and again, I'm not really talking about the youth vote. I'm talking about the college vote. As we've been seeing in the headlines, college kids are very worked up about this issue.
Yes, yes, they are. And again, if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest is Timothy Noah. It's written in an article in the New Republic. Yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. And, you know, I've been through a lot of elections. And after so many losses over the years, I've been to Democratic postmortems. Somebody always says, oh, we just need to go out and educate the voters. And that makes me cringe. What I believe we need to do is listen better. You say listening is a slow and exhausting process. But why is listening so important? Why is that? Because, you know, a lot of the working class people don't feel like they are being listened to, and the Republicans are using that.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I'm all for a certain kind of education. I'm all in favor of people being informed about what Biden has done. I am not in favor of people being educated about what they should care about. They know what they should care about.
True.
And there are a number of groups that have been doing absolutely the Lord's work on this for the last few years. And I'm going to name all of them because they all need money and they need support. And it's not sexy stuff, but it is very important stuff. There's Take Action Minnesota. There's Isaiah, which is also in Minnesota. There's We the People Michigan. Mm. There's Living United for Change in Arizona. Mm. There's Down Home North Carolina. Mm. There's the Carolina Federation, which is also in North Carolina. There's Florida Rising. There's the New Georgia Project and the Southern Economic Advancement Project. There's also a national group I mentioned earlier called Working America, which is doing this at the national level. And what these people go out and do is something called, and I think they wouldn't all embrace this phrase, but it's versions of what is called deep canvassing, which is a kind of canvassing where you go out and it's not just about saying, vote for this guy, vote for that guy. It's you are going out there, you are finding out what people's problems are. You are letting them educate you about what matters. Yes. You are over time, you try and build a relationship of trust where after you try and persuade them that this is a group that can help them deal with local, state, and federal government to the extent that those things can help whatever problems they tell you that they have. Because working people do not have easy access to the resources that government has to help people. And so they perform this service, and Somewhere along the line, most of them, not all of them, but most of these groups will say, well, if you'd like to know what all the various politicians' positions are on this issue that we're talking about, here they are. And, you know, they're not saying vote Democratic. They're saying, here's where they are. Here's where this guy stands. Here's where that guy stands. I'm here just to give you information. And people respond to that. Stacey Abrams, who I just think the world of. I think she is turning into a figure comparable in importance to Ralph Nader in the 1960s in helping people empower themselves. And she's founded a number of these groups, and she is going around and inviting ordinary citizens to demand democratic accountability. And it's she's done a fantastic job. She's, you know, she won two Georgia Senate seats in 2020. They were, you know, she's not been able to get herself elected, alas, but she has been just an extraordinary organizer. And she said to me, I create, fund, and support organizations that put forward year-round engagement.
Year-round,
and she said, when we reduce people just to voters, we lose them.
Yes, and I've spoken with friends, people of color, who have noticed that candidates, well, they mentioned Hillary Clinton, that comes around to their, you know, to places where they congregate right before the election, year round. You know, it change doesn't happen overnight. I know people on the left, you know, they get frustrated that change doesn't happen, you know, as soon as they want. It takes persistence. It does take persistence. And one perhaps final point, you point out that a team of political scientists found that Biden's leftward policy shift on economic issues is not hurting him, and that that is something that can work. And if he can communicate that, and Democrats are not great at communicating, Lord knows.
And so just to be specific, yes, he can talk about higher taxes. He can talk about taxing the rich. He
yes.
can talk about passing the PRO Act. There's strong support for labor unions, historically strong support for labor unions. It doesn't show up in union membership yet, but I think there's a good chance it will eventually, particularly when you've got people like Sean Fain, you know, just working miracles, as far as I'm concerned, in organizing these days. And Sean Fain is the president of the United Auto Workers, and had a huge victory in Chattanooga. First time a foreign-owned auto plant has voted in a union ever, and that is a political fight, because the opponents in those fights tend to be the GOP much more than the than management at these companies, because most of these foreign companies are European, a lot of German companies, and they're pro-union.
They know it works. They know,
but
it
they
works.
Get bullied. They get bullied by Republican politicians. They say, we will withhold, you know, because these southern states, they throw a lot of money at these German companies to move in.
Yeah.
And they say, we will withhold the money if you get too friendly with unions. There, in fact, is something I just wrote about today. I was shocked when I learned this. Are you familiar with the American Legislative Exchange Council?
Oh, yes.
They're a group, and it's a Koch-funded group that is very pro-business, and they basically write legislation for state legislatures.
Yes, they do.
And they, just in the last year, I think, have written legislation that is really appalling. The legislation says, and they're trying to get states to pass these laws, and Tennessee already has. Georgia is probably going to pass it as well, and Alabama. The legislation says it is against, you will violate state law if you accept financial incentives to locate your plant here and then voluntarily recognize the union.
Yeah, Alec is no friend of labor. That's for darn sure. I can tell you as a former legislator myself. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, so what they're basically saying is we're going to pay you guys to say no to labor. It's outrageous.
Well, the payoff is still there. If you want to get elected, especially in 2024, there's what you're saying. I think there's reason for hope out there that, you know, there's the bullies. Lord knows there's the bullies. And we have one orange bully in particular, but he seems to be going down. But there is hope. Thank you. Timothy Noah has written an article in The New Republic. Yes, Joe Biden can win the working class vote. So if people want to read more of your pieces, where can they go online?
They can go to newrepublic.com. They can also go to Backbencher, which is my Substack newsletter. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed that discussion, don't miss a single show. Subscribe. It's all free. And if you find the information valuable, your friends probably do too. Please ask them to also subscribe. It's on Apple, Spotify, Progressive Radio Network, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and of course, the website, keepingdemocracyalive.com. Thanks very much.